Okay, I think we have a full agenda, so I'd like to get going and welcome all of those who have joined us. We have members of the South Jordan City staff, the Planning Commission, with the exception of Mr. Wimmer, who I did not hear from ahead of this meeting, so he may ultimately show up, and then applicants and residents of our city. And we welcome you to the South Jordan Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, May 14th, 2024. Our first item of business this evening is a motion to approve our agenda as published. Do I have a motion?
I'll move that we approve the agenda as published.
Thank you, Commissioner Bevis. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Our next item of business is to review our minutes from our April 23rd Planning Commission meeting. Are there any comments from that? Great. I'm ready for a motion then.
Madam Chair, I move to approve the minutes as published from our previous meeting.
Thank you, Commissioner Gedge. I will second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, staff, any business for us this evening? Okay. Commissioners, I just want to draw your attention to the noticing that went out with this meeting. There's been some slight changes. We initially added Zoom to our platform and how we operated when COVID happened. The city is over time evaluating the usefulness of that. We will still at this time allow people to view our proceedings on Zoom. However, participation, public comments will only be received either in person during our meetings or if submitted by email to city staff. And just so that the public is aware, those comments that do get emailed to city staff are forwarded to the commission. We review those and they are included in our official minutes from our proceedings. I think that's everything I had. I did send out a document so that we could start brainstorming some ideas for governing rules for our body that could potentially count for some of our training in the future. So, as things dawn on you, you can certainly add them to that list. I anticipate that we will have a session in the future where we go over that list and discuss what we want to incorporate. So, that's it from me. Anything from this end? Down this way, please.
I maybe should have brought this up when we were considering the agenda, but item H2 and I1 are for the property. However, can we do this is just process, a subdivision before the rezone is approved by the city council? Or are we, I'm just thinking process. Should we have the legislative tonight and then have city council approve that recommendation before we do the subdivision? Or is it okay to proceed with the subdivision, but it's null and void unless city council approves?
Staff recommendation.
The recommendation would be to make your determination on the subdivision, but it's subject to the approval of the rezone. And I know that'll be in a couple of weeks that they'll look at that. But since we're confident that since it's the city's the applicant and the city council knows why we're doing it, they'll approve that rezone. So.
Okay, are you okay with proceeding as published
I
then?
am, it just, I guess, precedence for other residents who might apply for something similar,
Got it. Okay.
i.e., a property that we heard as a rezone, and they might have to come to the city for subdivision, trying to do both things in the future as the, for the same evening.
Correct order, sure.
And
Mr. Day?
that's correct. We usually do require the zoning to happen first, but this time we thought we could do it the other way.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt. Would you like to know who is online at any point during the meeting?
I don't think so.
Do we take attendance though anymore for the minutes?
We take care of that. We check
Oh,
on that.
okay.
Okay, great. Okay, nope, I think we're good then. Thank you, Mr. Day. All right, is that it from this end? All right, let's get down to business then. For those that have joined us this evening, for each of the items that we have this evening, the staff will present their report that they've put together. For each item, there will be an opportunity for the applicant, if present, to address the commission if they have any additional information or are available to answer questions. Then each item will have a time where it is open to the public, where if you've joined us this evening to speak to that item, we'll invite you to come to the podium and you'll have 3 minutes to address the commission on that item and present any evidence that you've brought with you pertaining to that particular item. And I think with that, we're ready for item H1, the Mosaic Residential Development Conditional Use Permit, and Demir has our staff report.
Yes, thank you. I can get this to work. Okay, so the property is located at 11210 South River Heights Drive. As you can see from this aerial map, the property is vacant and undeveloped. It's approximately 4 acres in size. It is situated between Bangor Highway to the west, River Heights to the east, and then you have the ICO apartments to the north and an office project to the south. The property is zoned BHMU. It stands for Bangor Highway Mixed Use. Also, in addition to being governed by the zoning code, it's also governed by a development agreement. That agreement is attached to the report that's been submitted as part of the packet for you guys tonight. And as far as the site plan, there's one proposed access off River Heights Drive, and then you have two connections to the private office development to the south. Roads within the projects are proposed to be private. They will be maintained and owned by the HOA. There's an existing fence along the north boundary. This fence is proposed to remain. It's not going to be changed. And then a new fence is going to be installed along Bangor Highway as required by city code. The south and the east project boundary is going to remain fence-free. There's not going to be any fencing along those two sites. As you can see from here, we have 72 townhome units in the project and 4 duplex units. Each one of the units has a two-car garage. Aside from private garage spaces, private parking spaces, you're going to have some guest parking around the project along the south and the west edge of the project mostly. And as far as the architecture is concerned, all of the buildings are 3 stories. They're going to reach heights of up to 39 feet at the peak. And then you're going to have, as you can see, there's going to be some variation in materials, design, and colors to give it some differentiation from one building to the next. Architectural Review Committee has reviewed the project. They recommend approval of the project. Also, being a conditional use permit, we haven't found any detriments to the proposed use. And with that, we recommend approval, and I'll turn it over to you, commissioners.
Thanks, Demir. I do appreciate having the documents related to the history of this property included as part of the staff report. That said, I think there were multiple, and I'm not sure that I followed all the details, so I wanted to ask several questions with regards to what I'm reading, what may have been overruled by newer agreements. So several items that I pulled out, one was it called out for this particular zone that there would be a variety of homes available. Does the city feel like an interpretation of that that's appropriate is 72 townhomes with 4 town or duplexes thrown in? Is that a variety?
So what we've done determined in the past that as long as a project has at least 2 different housing types that we're okay with the project being proposed as such. In this case, you have 2 duplex buildings and then the rest are row homes or townhomes.
So even when it's only less than 5% of the total, that's considered a variety?
Right.
Okay.
Something similar we had with Lennar Homes. They also had, I think, 2 duplex buildings and the rest were townhomes.
Okay. It referenced several times that along Lucasdale, and I can't actually see it in the staff report, I never found that road, but that there would be 3rd-acre lots along the west side. I'm not seeing anything that looks like it fits that description.
Yeah, it's not nearby. That's at the east end of the district, and this is by Bangor Highway. So just a different...
So the development agreement is a much bigger...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then that may also put...
the entire BHMU zone.
Okay. So then I presume that phase 1 and phase 2 of building have already occurred because, again, they called out 3 units per acre in phase 1 and 6 units per acre in phase 2.
That's correct.
Okay. Yes. Sounds like you had some questions as well. I'll let you go next.
Okay, some of these may be for applicant if they're here, but as I was reading through the development agreement, there were a couple of things that also stuck out to me, and I went back through when we approved a similar project on the same property a couple of years ago, and there were 60 units on that one. One of the questions that was asked was about permanent shadowing, and the answer was they put two-story buildings in on the majority of the property to prevent that, but now they're all three-story. So is there any concern that there's going to be permanent shadowing on the property from staff or?
Not from staff. It's not uncommon to have three-story buildings. We have them in Daybreak and some other parts, so I don't think it's uncommon.
Okay, and then do you happen to know the height of the apartment buildings that are next to this?
I do not.
Okay.
They're three-story, I think,
so they're going to be similar height?
Yeah.
Okay. And then it doesn't look like there's any driveways, just alleyways to get into the garages. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. And then I noticed there's a stub road on the northeast end of the property. Is that intended to be connected at any point to the property to the north?
It is not.
Okay. No. Sorry. I have a couple more. And then it also says the road width is 26 feet wide, curb to curb. Does that allow for on-street parking? That might be a question for Jeremy.
It does not.
Okay, so that's not wide enough. So there's no on-street parking. No. Are there going to be... never mind, that's an HOA question.
The subdivision, we may see some signage improvements. Yeah, but this being a conditional use permit, I think we're maybe jumping a bit ahead.
Okay. And then do we know the total density of this project? I didn't see it in the staff report. I know that the development agreement says 8, but... I'm sure we're under that. I'm just curious what it is.
The project itself is about 20 units to the acre because okay. The property is 4 acres. And then there are about 80 units. Is that right?
76.
So the, close to 20 units to the acre.
The 8 units per acre is for the overall district. The district is 8 units per acre. And with 200 acres, they're allowed to have 1,600 units built within the district boundaries. And this they still have more to build, even with a 76 here. So.
I think last time I looked at it, they had, about 200-300 more to build?
Didn't say they were going to, but there's...
Okay, and then that question's for the applicant. My last question is, why are we allowing no amenities and no turf and no green space on site with 76 units? That's a little concerning to me. I know we've approved it before, but looking at it closely, there's no grass and no amenities. Is that common for us to approve something like that with this many units in such a small area?
Usually if we require something, it's in the city code, and we can point to the city code when the applicant or anybody has questions, why are we requiring this? We can say it's in the city code, it's a city requirement, and this is why we're asking you to do this, but we don't have anything in the city code that requires amenities. Now, this being a conditional use permit, I guess you could make that a condition of approval. You just would have to find some kind of nexus between what you're asking for and the detriment, I guess.
Okay.
I had one question that I'd forgotten about related to what she asked about with the height. I'm assuming that because this is a special zone, they get a height variance from what's normal in residential areas. That's why we can see something over 35 feet.
Yeah, I think in the agreement, if you go to the architecture, it says that you can go up to 4 stories high.
4 stories, I think it was 40.
Okay. All right, Commissioner Catmull.
Yeah, my question, just to help me orient, similar to other questions, is this zone being a special zone. That's why we're seeing this conditional use, is because of a previous code or text that said it had to come before the Planning Commission for a conditional use permit as a project. Is that right? That is, because I am not familiar with that being in the current code.
Yeah, no, it's not in the current code. It's in the agreement.
Because that zone's not even available.
And the old code is attached to the agreement.
Right.
Right.
And that's what you're going through, is we're going through that code, not current code, And so we have to kind of put our minds back into the way things were back then, and we can't look at today's code.
Yes, yes.
And interpret it that way. Okay, great, thank you.
So conditional use permit review tonight, will there be, I guess, preliminary or final site plan at the next phase of this project?
Yeah,
and will that be done by administratively by staff or come before this body?
Preliminary subdivision will come to you, okay. And then the final subdivision will be approved by staff.
Okay, and then, so I'm just gonna make a couple comments that'll probably be done in the site plan, but one, I mean, so street parking, but on River Heights Drive, is, I'm assuming because that's a public street that it would be allowed. However, I'm assuming fire has also signed off on this, but what are the contingency plans in case there are incidents on 104th or 114th? For fire response times to this development or the surrounding developments. We're putting a lot of units in, and they're basically there's one street. And so just what are the contingencies? Because fire is one of the few things that we can review the site plan on, or it could be a potential detriment for adding 76 additional units to this 4-acre space. Obviously, we know we can't access off Bangor because that's a major highway, but yeah, probably not for the conditional use tonight, but I just want to, you know, when it gets to the next phase, just so we can all have that question on that.
Commissioner Bishop, do you have any questions?
No, you guys have beat me to it. Thank you.
I do have one additional question, Demir. Will you review what parking requirements we have for these? I just know that we've had larger townhomes before that don't have any driveway. Probably two parking spots is all that is required, but we sure hear a lot of complaints about insufficient parking when that's the case. But will you tell us what the city requires?
So again, it's in the agreement, and the requirement is to provide a two-car garage space, and just that's what they're doing. I think their garages are 20 by 20, so that's sufficient, big enough for two cars.
Okay.
And guest parking is something that they're doing on their own. It's something that we used to have in the code. We don't have that in the code anymore. So we don't have any kind of requirement or ratio to ask them to provide. So what they're doing is just on their own merit.
Okay. I know that it meets the code and thus the extent of our powers is fulfilled. I can't do anything about that. I'm going to just express my concern for the record that we've seen other developments about like this. This does not usually provide the sufficient parking that people expect. So, okay.
Can I ask one more comment based Certainly. On email we received from the public, just to make sure, because
the workman, Tyler Workman.
Yeah, from Tyler Workman, a resident, and it will be entered into the record, but just to make sure, because this is a private development, the city has no control over whether this can be owner-occupied or the sale of the units to whatever entity decides to purchase them. We as a city have no control over who actually can be sold to or can purchase these properties. Is that correct?
Right.
I was also going to ask another clarifying question. We can't compel an HOA to adopt any specific rules, correct?
We cannot.
Okay.
If they want to do it, we can. I mean, you could ask them, see if they're open to the idea, but we can't make them do it. No.
Okay.
I mean, the same thing with garage spaces. I think one of the issues we have is when people start using their garage space as a storage space as opposed to a garage space. Maybe that's something they could put in the HOA that they're not to be used for storage. But again, that's up to them. We can't make them.
Okay. All right. Is the applicant present this evening, Mr. Ballstead? Is that you? Do you have anything to add to the staff report at this time?
I might be able to shed some light on some of your concerns.
Will you come up, state your name and where you reside for our records? Woman, please.
Thanks, Commissioners. Jacob Ballstead, Garbett Homes, 273 North East Capitol Street, Salt Lake City, Utah. Thanks for staff and everyone's work on getting to this point. I appreciate your comments and concerns you have about the project and what we're doing. It's kind of a unique deal because there was a development agreement that was signed probably 10 or 15 years ago that was originally done when the district was developed. that allowed certain types of uses. And so that's really what's guiding us in what we can and cannot do on this site. As was stated earlier, the allowed density on the site is way higher than what we're proposing. And we are sensitive and do our best to be sensitive to the issues you brought up, specifically guest parking, open space, fire, those things. Like Demir said, we're not required any guest parking, but we know that when people live here, they want to have people over. We need to provide guest parking for them. And we provided 31 stalls for 76 units as a ratio. Is actually pretty strong. I mean, we do developments and subdivisions like this all the time. I'm sure there may be instances where that's not sufficient parking, but I think for 95% of the time it will be. We are concerned because it's market driven. People want their friends to park, and so we do our best to provide it. We are required to provide 2 parking stalls in the garage, and we do control that in the CCNR as it relates to. You have a two-car garage. You can't use it for storage. It has to be accommodated. You can store stuff in there, but you also have to be able to get your vehicles in it. So we can control that through the HOA and the CCNR so that people use their garages for their vehicles and not the guest parking out and about. I will also comment on, I read the comment from one of the neighbors regarding rental properties. We've been down this road before too. I think ideally neighborhoods, strong neighborhoods are created by home ownership. And there are always some investors that end up buying rent to their properties. And when we sell a community, we always try to limit that. Anywhere from 10 to 20% we'll limit. I don't think it's very often we even get close to that in these days. Rental properties just don't work financially very well right now. We have in the past also put in the covenants where we limit rentals, and it is a nightmare that's not manageable. So we wouldn't entertain that. But when we do sell it, we will limit it internally and who we sell to and how many rental properties will be there. So these are all issues that we are sensitive to and do our best to make it a good community that's going to work well for the neighborhood and the surrounding neighborhoods and our future homeowners. So I appreciate the concerns. I think that's all I had to share, unless you have other questions for me.
What type of long-term involvement does Garbett Homes have in a development like this?
Okay, so I think in the letter from the neighbor, why we're developing the property, the declarant stays in control of the homeowners association. Once we sell the last unit, we're required to turn over the homeowners HOA to the homeowners. So the declarant or the developer will turn to them. They'll elect a board. Whoever it is, they elect, and they, from then on, will have control on what happens in the property. So
the HOA at that point, if they chose to add amenities, they could.
Sure.
Or if someone, they chose to buy a property or something like that and put a clubhouse or something like that.
Yeah.
They could.
They could.
Okay.
Yeah. So really, once we're done, we sold the last unit, and we turn it over to the homeowners. It's really up to them to manage it. From there on, we're not really involved.
What is the typical timeline for that to happen?
You know, so for example, there's a couple things that have to happen. One, we have to sell all the homes and complete all the buildings and landscaping and have an inspections with the property managers and make sure it's all done. So if we sell the last home in December, it probably won't be until June or so when all the landscaping is done for when we turn it over. So it's really just triggered on those two issues.
Is there any time limit written into?
Yeah, there is a limit in the declaration in the CCNRs where we have to turn it over a certain time frame after the last unit is sold. And I don't really know. I don't know that date off that timeline off the top of my head.
Is there anything requiring you to, I guess I'm asking, is there a way to ensure that you don't hang on to a unit for a long time?
A unit?
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, we can keep a unit for sure. We can.
So in theory, you could have control of it indefinitely.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, I guess we could. Yeah, but in reality, we do a lot of subdivisions. I don't. I don't know why we'd ever hang on to it and try to control the HOA. There's really no reason for us to do it. Okay. I don't really understand that gentleman's reference in the letter. I read it, and I don't know the history of that project. I wasn't involved in it directly, so I'm not sure what his concern was, but no, there's no reason for us to stick around. The sooner we can get out of it and be done with it and turn over the homeowners, the happier we are and the happier they are.
Okay.
So.
Questions? Will we have the applicant up here?
A couple. Okay. How long do you anticipate a project like this will take to complete the last townhome on?
I would say, the market's kind of weird right now. I mean, sales are a little bit difficult. If we sold two a month, we would be happy. If ideally, we'd probably sell closer to three or four a month. So that's probably a 2 or 3 year build time, is my guess. That's from when the first unit's done. It'd probably take us at least 6 months to do the improvements, and then another 6 months to complete the first building. So it's 3 or 4 years we'll be in there.
And then, do you happen to know the roof pitch on these buildings?
There are different roof pitches and the different styles. My guess is they're probably a 6/12 pitch. Okay. Some of them may be an 8/12 pitch. We have some hip roofs in there that are the lower pitch. We also have some shed roofs that probably are, I don't think anything's more than 6/12.
Okay.
I don't know them off the top of my head, but just generally how we build in our roof pitches, that's
okay.
Where they're at.
So we don't have anything less than a 6/12.
No, we might have a 4/12 in there on some of the hips. I'd have to look, but I'm not totally sure.
Okay.
But I could get that answer for you. That's not a problem.
No, it's not a big deal. I just, in the development agreement, I talked about 6/12 being the minimum pitch, and I looked like some of them were less. So I know that will be handled later, but.
No, if it's in the development agreement, we meet the development agreement. Okay. I forgot that in there. So for sure, if it's not, which I think it is, we will meet it.
Okay, so then my next question is for Demir then, where we are approving based on their, I want to get the word right, hold on, their design book and concept plan. Are we approving the roof pitch as it is, or is that exempt from it and they will have to comply with the development agreement?
So they're going to have to comply with the agreement, but I think the verbiage in the agreement states that anything less than 6/12 can be approved by Planning Commission.
Okay.
So if this is lower than 4/12 and you're okay with that pitch, I mean, then, yeah, okay, that's what we're approving.
Okay, so we would be approving this pitch as is,
yes.
Even though it's lower. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I can't remember if we have 4/12s in there or not.
That's okay. Let me turn that back on. A couple of them do look.
There are the pitches do vary for sure.
Okay. That's all I have.
All right, thank you. We might call on you again after public comment.
Thanks, Commissioners. Appreciate it.
All right, as Commissioner Gedge indicated, we did receive an email from a Mr. Workman that's been entered into our records. Obviously we all reviewed that since that's how our questions were focused to the applicant was addressing those concerns. So at this time, we are going to open up the floor to public comment. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this item, we'll invite you to come forward to address the commission and present any evidence that you've brought. You'll have 3 minutes to address the commission. If there are questions asked, we'll make a note of those and get them answered by staff after public comment. Did either of you come to speak to this item this evening? Okay. Then I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Commissioners?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I have one thing to add. The gentleman that sent the email to me,
mm-hmm.
in my email response to him, and this was prior to what I heard from Steven, I told him that he could either, if he has additional comments, that he could come to the meeting or comment via Zoom. Because at that time, I did not know about the change. So I'm not sure how we want to proceed. I don't know if he's on Zoom.
I think if he's on Zoom and he was told that, I think he should have the opportunity to.
However, I will go back to the comment I make every single time once you submit written comment. Should you be afforded the additional time? So basically you're getting double the time of any other resident that would be in the chamber.
Certainly. So I agree. However, based on what staff just told us. Staff responded, and that may elicit additional.
Can we?
Can
we do it to any information that was not presented in the email?
Yes, we can restrict it to that. Mr. Day, do we have any external Zoom participants listening this evening?
He's not on there.
Okay. Then I think that's not a concern for us.
Okay. There we go.
Thank you. All right. So back to the commission. Commissioners, any additional discussion on this? I've already expressed my concerns. This type of development, the location for how dense it is appropriate. I do appreciate that generally in current code, we limit it a little more. However, as Commissioner Catmull got clarified, this was done under a different time with a different zone. And as far as I can tell, it does meet its master agreement. And so based on that, I don't have any objections this evening. We're gonna start down here this time. Mr. Bishop, anything you wanna add?
I do wish there were more green space, but yeah, it is what it is.
Okay, Mr. Gidge.
Following up on Commissioner Bevins and the roof pitch, you know, are we basically green lighting the 412 pitch today, or will that come in the site plan? So just because of the conditional use permit aspect of that, I think we're green lighting that, but clarification in what motion we are making on that, based on that. My other comment concern. When the property does go over to the HOA, do we run the concern of them wanting it to then be the private road be taken over by the city improvements now that it's HOA run and no longer by the developer, which I believe has happened a few times since some of us have been on the commission. So just a concern, and I don't know how we prevent that, but just raise that concern because of the potential expense to the city once the last unit is sold and it becomes owner HOA run.
I think that plays into what my concern was with respect to an agreement put in place long enough ago that maybe our general land use plan doesn't comply as well anymore.
And that is a great segue because I look at this project and I look at our general plan and I think there's no way that
matches,
holds up to the general plan. And so I'm torn that way, but there's nothing I can really do because it is, it's almost a generation ago, 2006 or so, mm-hmm. to 2000, by the time it's done, 2027, that's almost 20 years. And five commissions ago and councils. And so I don't see any reason to, anything to mitigate that given what constraints we're under. I definitely just want to emphasize and put on record for the council and staff to, we need to put limitations on how long a project can live in an unfinished state when it's in a floating zone or has a development use. We've got to put a time on there somewhere.
I can see where that might deter.
Oh, I mean, it doesn't have to be
right.
2 years, like a building permit. It could be 6 years, 8 years, sure. But 20, going on 20 years, that's a long time. And a lot of expectations have changed. A lot changes in 20 years.
You're good.
That's it. Yeah.
Commissioner Bivens.
The roof pitch, like Commissioner Ketch said, I know even if it's lower, I know I brought that up, but the townhomes just to the northeast of this also have similar pitches on some of their roofs. So although it doesn't meet the development agreement, I don't have an issue approving that. I just wanted it clarified. And obviously we'll see this again at subdivision and site approval. I said it before, I have some real concerns about not having any open green space and having zero turf on this project. They're 2 and 3 bedroom townhomes, so you're gonna have kids in this townhome where there's no driveways, there's no green space, there's really nowhere for these kids to go. So tell me if I'm wrong, but I do see that as a detrimental effect to this. There's nowhere for anyone to go other than inside, I guess. Is that a detrimental effect that I can cite? I'm asking anyone. Yeah.
I would defer that one to the our legal department. Some of the other I can respond to some of the other comments you had. First, before we go to that, the it says in the development agreement that the Planning Commission can approve the lower roof pitch. It doesn't say you have to. You can still hold them to the 612. So you can. That's not a condition. That's just you're just telling me follow the development agreement. You know, says is that you choose not to approve it if you want. You don't have to approve 412. And also, when it comes to the roads and streets going from private to public, yes, they can always ask. Maybe Jeremy can shed light on how, you know, what for us, for the city to accept those roads as public, there's a lot of things that have to be done. And I don't know about width, but that might be one of them. Also, the construction of them, we would make sure that they're all in tip-top shape before we did that as well. But Jeremy, if you can add any more, I don't.
Yeah, it's always a risk with, you know, private roads that they may become public, but there is a process that's been implemented for how that could potentially happen, and ultimately it needs to be accepted by the city council. The city council would need to make a conscious choice to take the roads on as public. Leading up to that, there's a whole evaluation period, a recommendation that comes from the city staff, and then ultimately it goes to city manager and city council for final approval. So.
One thing that I want to add is that maybe you can ask the applicant if they could provide some open space for some type of activity, green space. I don't think it would be that much more cost-wise to provide some sod instead of rocks. So we could ask and see if he's open to the idea.
I'm okay with that. Would you be willing to come back up?
Yeah, so I'll address both issues. I'll start with the grass. So part of it, I'll give you some background on Garbett Homes. One of the things we pride ourselves on is trying to be sustainable and energy efficient. And we hold ourselves to a standard known as Zero Energy Ready. It's an energy standard that was developed by the Department of Energy. And there's a quantitative scoring system that evaluates how energy efficient a home is, and it's called a HER score. A HER score is an inverted score, so the lower the score, the lower your utility bills. If you've ever heard of a net zero home has a HER score of zero. If you built a code home, a home today to code, it would probably have a score around 80. If your home's older than that, it would likely have a higher HER score. Our HER scores are in the low 40s. So we use about half the amount of energy as a code-built new construction property, new construction home. And as we've developed these techniques and energy-saving techniques, we've implemented them into water. Last year when we had all the water issues and the dryness, we implemented water-saving elements as well, and that included localscape landscaping. So Jordan Valley Water District, Conservancy District, has created this guide for landscaping with natural local plants that use less water that can live in the dry climate without as much water. So we implement that on all of our communities. In addition to that, we limit the amount of sod that we put in, and in some cases, we don't do any sod. Now, in many cases, sod is preferable and desirable in certain locations. And we are more than happy to implement some sod areas so that kids can play, dogs have places to go, things of that nature. So that's not a problem at all. Second concern with the roof sheds. My guess is there's probably a couple roof elements that have less than a 612 pitch. And when we submitted the plans, we had an architectural review with a member of the city council. I think a member of the planning commission was there and staff, and reviewed in detail the elevations, the materials, and things of that nature. I think they're appealing. We have nationally renowned architects out of California that design these. They know design very well. And if changing a roof pitch from a 412 to a 612 sounds simple, but it really alters the architecture and the style and the theme. And on some of the elevations, we'd probably just have to start over and really do something very different. So if you're comfortable with the elevations and you like them, I would encourage you to pass them with the 412. If you have some major objections, we can certainly entertain those. So anyway, does that help answer your question, Commissioner?
How do you want to phrase?
I would still like to hear from our council.
How would you recommend we phrase a conditional use permit requesting some sort of an outdoor active area?
Pet relief area or?
First, going to Commissioner Bevan's question of whether it's a detrimental result or effect. I can't substitute my judgment for yours, but so that's something you'll have to determine, but if I was sitting there, I might be concerned about that, but that's up to you. It's legally, I'm not here to tell you that it is or isn't a detrimental effect. I also note that there's been testimony saying that, and I haven't checked into the background of this, that the density that is being proposed here tonight is much less, or at least somewhat less, am I getting this right, than what was allowed under the development agreement. And you might take that into consideration. It's also my understanding that this particular segment is not the entire area of the development agreement, and you may need to or want to consider what's in other areas within the scope of the development agreement and whether that satisfies or maybe even further causes further concern. So those are just some of my thoughts on it, but it's up to you. And I think you got to consider that the people moving in, they're going to have some choice and be able to consider whether there's amenities available. And affordability is a huge issue right now. And whether adding additional requirements for these things is going to affect the affordability or not, those are all different things for you to weigh.
Is River Heights Park a part of this development, or is that a city property?
That's a city property.
Okay. I asked.
There's a crosswalk between the two at the moment.
River Heights Drive is a city road, though.
Yes.
Are there sidewalks all the way?
Yes.
Okay.
I have one more question for the applicant, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brought up. What do you have any idea on price point for these units at the moment?
This was asked of me in the architectural review committee as well. I think they'll likely be around $500,000.
Okay.
That could change. I don't know for sure. That's kind of the ballpark.
And is that for the townhomes and the twin homes? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's two bedrooms and three bedrooms, so there'll be some deviation in the price, but low 500s is probably where we'll be. I wish we could be less. It's really hard to be less, but anyway, it's a crazy world. I don't know how people afford things, but somehow they do, but it's not easy. Okay.
Can I ask, in the pictures that are in our packet that you guys provided, there are some small pockets of grass with each individual unit. Is that correct, that the owners of those townhomes, there are some small pockets of grass. It looks like there's a picture of a dog with one, you know, architectural, or is that just a misinterpretation?
I don't, in the drawing? I don't think we've actually submitted a landscape plan.
No, so, this is just a color drawing.
Right. Yeah. So I think I haven't really gone through in detail the landscape. I gave you the history about our desire to have minimal irrigation and water, and the grass is a big consumer of that. So I don't know if that rendering was more specifically for the elevations. It wasn't necessarily for the landscaping. So I'm not sure how I wouldn't count on that. It may end up like that, but we just haven't gone that far yet.
Nothing. So we might want to reference that. It would have, we make, because people will go back to this minutes of this meeting in this packet and see that there's a picture of small grass and a dog. And so they may infer that. So
there is on page 33, their proposed fencing and landscape plan, and it does say all shrubs and trees, no turf.
Oh, yeah. So thank you.
That is in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Demir, can you confirm, though, in the staff report, when it talked about fencing, it did indicate that each unit will have a small fenced-off area?
Yes, that's correct.
Do applicants have the option to grass that area on their own, should they want to?
I believe so. It's their private yard, yeah. I imagine so. Yeah.
Will your HOA restrict that?
I would just say if you want us to grass those areas, we're willing to do it. So it's, I haven't thought in detail other than we have an objective to try to minimize the amount of grass and turf for water reasons. But I know that cities are sensitive to it. And I think you have some legitimate concerns regarding the grass. So I think we're willing to grass some activated areas and areas where kids can play, or even some limited areas inside those fences.
Okay.
That brought up one more question on my end. If I remember right, Demir, in the staff report, it says that only the townhomes facing River Heights Drive would have the 3-foot fence. Do all of the units have that fenced area, or is it just the units facing River Heights?
Oh, our thought is they would all have them.
Okay.
That may have ended up in there, but it wasn't intentional, I don't think, on our part.
I may have just misread it or misremembering, but
yeah.
Okay.
Commissioners, questions for the applicant? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, commissioners.
If I could add, when it comes to grassing the areas in front of them, if they agree to put the grass in there, that would still be following Jordan Valley's design guidelines for
what's allowed
for landscaping, because there are really small areas. It's in our code as well. We've mirrored what they have in our code in water efficient landscaping areas that are 250 square feet or less. They can have grass in those. They don't want to be. But they also have to be at least 8 feet wide, because they don't want overwatering, overspray. That's the whole thing.
Which section of the code is the?
16, chapter 1630 is the water efficient landscaping requirements.
And that is that override. That is not. That section is not in the development agreement.
Oh, no, we didn't have anything.
Well, I mean, it didn't exist then, but I'm saying, like, there's no conflict about what it said back in 2006 or 10 versus
no,
what it
says
today.
Not a conflict. We don't, I mean, obviously they have to follow what the development agreement is first.
Right.
But if they choose to have landscaping and so forth, we would require that the landscaping meet the standards. So
right, unless the development agreement said something specifically about landscaping that was in there, but I don't think I saw that.
I don't know if there's anything in there about landscaping.
Okay. I have one question for staff, I guess. The detrimental effect, as I understand it, is detrimental effect to the zone and the area around that. It's not like whether it's sellable or the quality of the particular project thing. It's about the effect to the surrounding properties. Do I have that correct?
Well, I guess it's anything that has any kind of negative effect on anything from the use itself. So I guess you would have to find it, make that conclusion, but.
I mean, it's allowed. I mean, they're allowed in the zone with conditional use, so you search for detrimental effects unique to the project that goes beyond a mixed-use project. Or not, it's not mixed-use, but it's the project, right?
Okay. Jeremy, if we were to start going down the road of pointing out that there's a park a half a mile down the road, that having access to that is sufficient active area, does it make the most sense to have residents reach out to the city in the future to install that, or is that something that makes more sense now to ask a developer to include it as part of what? A crosswalk, sorry.
Sorry, there is an existing crosswalk right there. It's got flashing, it's a flashing crosswalk. I know that firsthand because we had to remove a couple trees to improve visibility and things to make it safe. Because there's quite a bit of pedestrian activity
right across there. From the park.
Right at the park, yeah, right at the corner of I think it's like Vista Pradera Way or something, yes. Right on the south side of the park
and
there.
And I just stopped for a child that was crossing there 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah,
that was yeah, not it gets there used. When we lived I've stopped there as well. So that's fantastic.
And, sorry, one more thing. And the park is 800 feet to the north, so it's less than a quarter mile away.
Okay, perfect. Commissioners, do we need further discussion? I am open to an amended motion, but I will leave it to one of you to make it if you feel like you want to identify that as something that needs to be mitigated.
I don't want to make the motion. Nate's usually better at phrasing that stuff, but I do, I'm very torn on this. I like the product. I think it's great. We need more housing. The open space is super concerning for me, but if they're willing to put the grass in those fenced in areas, I think that with the park, and I'm glad there's a crosswalk there now. It wasn't there when we lived in that neighborhood, so that kind of helps ease my mind there. I don't have an issue with the roof pitch. So if we need to just say we're approving it as is, then I think we should include that as well. But I think I do want to include that they are willing to put in.
Do you want to be so specific as to say in the fenced areas, or he used a term activated areas, which might be more communal?
I'm fine with either one, as long as there is some sort of
grass, turf element.
Well, or the option, the other concern is just the economics of it, because there may be purchasers who may not want that at all.
Yeah.
I want to go with the full xeriscaping.
I don't want to say it has to be every fenced area. I think
so, like the option of turf and activated areas?
There needs to be some. Whether that's in the fenced areas or in a common area, I don't care where it is, but without that, I'm a definite no.
And then, because we will see this again during site plan, of course, so.
So we'll have a chance to review that.
So to see grass or turf incorporated in the landscape plan.
Mm-hmm.
Got it, okay. Madam Chair, if there are no further comments, I'd like to make a attempt at a motion this evening.
Please.
So let me get everything ready here. Okay, based on our discussion this evening and the public testimony given in the staff report, I move that we, the Planning Commission, approve application PLCUP 2024-00023 to allow a multifamily residential project on property generally located at 11210 South River Heights Drive in conjunction with the applicable design book and concept plan presented showing different roof pitches as discussed, and that a landscape plan will be presented in the site plan phases showing landscaping on the activated portions of the property.
Turf.
Good?
I liked it. Okay. Any discussion? Mr. Bishop, Mr. Catnell, you're thinking?
I am thinking, because I'm not sure where we can ask that of the developer, like get that specific about the turf on the conditional use permit before us.
Okay.
because it's just saying, like, is that a detrimental effect? I almost would rather say, if I was to do this, that we plan to do a further review of the landscaping in the site plan. I don't know if we can do that. But rather than tie it to the conditional use, because I don't think it's a detrimental effect.
Make a case for why it's a detrimental effect.
I mean, I have to put myself in the 2000.
No, I know.
I have to put myself in 2006, 2010 when I first, you know, moved
back
to South
then,
Jordan.
They were very water hungry.
They were water hungry, but we had a different, we had more high density going in too. Sure. Like, we had a higher density going in. So it was both. We had both ends.
Can you state for the record so that we have a defensible reason for implying or imposing this condition?
I can understand Steve's point, and I think as long as the developer, like they've stated, are willing to do it, and I think I can trust them that we will see it at site plan, and if we don't, then I will be a definite no at that point. But I think they've stated for the record that they are willing to do that, so if Steve feels strongly about it, I'm okay just stating that we'll review it.
Could you rephrase it? Per the applicant's willingness.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just trying to think how to say this for the record. In addition to my motion, the last line, changing it to turf, per discussion with the applicant this evening.
You good? Okay, Ms. Valdez has us covered.
Yeah, it's on the record.
Okay. Because per discussion with the applicant, that way
it's all covered in the public record.
But that way also, a future, if they decide to sell this property and the next developer wants to come in, at least it's tied to the conditional use permit.
Because this is, what, the third time we've seen this in 3 years? So
I share Commissioner Bevan's concern that there is a detriment. So I think there's, I don't know, you know, that's 2-1 so far, so I don't know how the others feel,
I agree.
But.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you have anything else you wanna?
No, I mean, I still don't see it as, I guess I've always thought of detriments mostly as those that impact around
versus,
or the zone, like it, because of this development, we're impacting here. I look at it as I say, will children and pets and so forth probably come into this because of the affordability and everything else? Probably yes. But does that require them, or can free people who are choosing to buy and enter into contracts choose to say, like, oh, there's no amenities there. I can't see my kids walking down the street to go to the park, or I can't see a place to put my dog. And I can't, you know, because of that, and I can't say that that's absolutely going to be a detrimental effect or it's even likely, because I just don't know what's going to get sold there. So, the impact around there, it's part of that project with, and I looked and there's like no other parks in the other Garbett, no areas except for this one and all that. So I guess I don't have a strong conviction enough to say that, and that's okay. Like, if everyone else feels the fine, then I would be a no on the motion because I can't find the detrimental effect, but I'm otherwise okay with the project. I think it's for all the reasons we talked about.
I could potentially argue that not having an outdoor space may push them to adjacent properties that might, and then they get more use than they would have otherwise.
It could, and I just don't know if, I don't know that that's, we've tried that before, like with drive, and stuff, and the action has been like, well, if that happens, that's like a civil matter, or it's a blah, 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 blah. And there's lots of ways to indicate that, but it's the closest thing would be like a safety issue, but I don't know enough evidence or proof to say that either.
So this reminds me of a development we had last year off of Redwood that had not much green space, and there were a couple of no votes from this board, from this commission. City Council ultimately pushed it back and did insist that the developer put in more green space and more playground space for the residents, and it did force their density to go down. So I don't see an issue with it being kind of a requirement. I do. You
That's
probably
been
remember that meeting.
In my mind, is we've been talking about this too. Yeah.
But I have to go back to, like, this development agreement, which has been signed and amended, is not something new, and I can't look at it in the current context, as I understand it. But maybe, you know, I mean, they can build that. It's by, they can. And so I don't know that we can say no.
I think you can always put this in your, the applicant has already agreed to put in the green space, and so it's not a condition any longer. It's something he's agreed to do. So it's not a condition you're putting on this. It's just saying that it's approved because, and it'll be in the record that the applicant agreed in a public meeting to put in the green space. So they will be held.
That's what the motion states, and it'll be at the landscape totally plan. Depending on what's presented there, we'll see, you know, what properties, if any, on their landscape plan shows this, or common areas, or whatever that might be. So that's up to the applicant to determine, you know, out of the 76 units, which properties have or have not. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a potential detriment based on the discussion we've had, based on our light of this other properties we can review, not going back to the development agreement from decades ago, and we have a way to mitigate that detriment with the applicant agreeing to that. So I think.
And a second chance to review at site plan.
Yes, so I think.
I'm okay with a yes vote on this.
I'm good. I'll second it then. Ms. Valdez?
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollis?
Yes.
Commissioner Bishop?
Yes.
Commissioner Catmull?
Aye.
And Commissioner Bevins?
Yes.
Okay. This passes 5-0. Mr. Ballstead, we'll see you with your site plan soon, I hope. Thank you for sticking with us this evening. Yes, we always appreciate when the applicants participate. It certainly helps get a lot of questions answered, so thank you for your time this evening.
Madam Chair, can I think for the, we might want to make a motion to amend the agenda, maybe to move up what our administrative items, so the other residents who are present can maybe, we can get it out of the way for them, and then get to the last two.
Please make a motion.
Madam Chair, I moved, before I do that, are you guys here for the property on 114th South?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move that we amend the agenda to next here, item number H3, the conditional use permit for temporary parking lot at 1602 West, 1400 South, ahead of H2 and I1.
We have a motion. Is there any discussion on that motion? Okay, I will second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so.
I have one more motion.
Sure,
we have a motion that we adjourn for 5 minutes.
Okay. I will second. Okay, Mr. Gedge, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we'll be back at 7:40.
Sorry.
That's okay. Okay, I'm going to make a motion that we reconvene. Do I have a second?
I will second.
We'll give you a minute. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Back to it. So, per our motion just before our break, we have moved the conditional use permit for the temporary parking lot, item H3, ahead of item H2. And Miguel has our staff report.
All right, thank you. So this is a conditional use permit for a temporary parking lot located on the corner of 1400 South. The address is 1602 West. So it's actually three parcels. So it's a square one and then surrounded by two smaller rectangles. And it's a total of 1/4 acre. And the applicant is requesting that the city lease it to them for a temporary parking lot for a period of 24 to 36 months. The concept plan, that's the zoning, it's an A5. The concept plan has 28 parking stalls on it. And so as of right now, the city is still developing the agreement with the applicant. But as I've been told, the applicant will be responsible for maintenance on the property. They will be responsible for carrying insurance on the property. And they'll be responsible for all costs associated with requirements to improvements on the property. And let's see here, what else? And so in terms of use, there's not gonna be any overnight parking. It's only from the hours about, I think they said 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. It's not for customer use either. It's only for employees of a nearby construction company across the road.
And with that, staff recommends approval of the conditional use permit.
Miguel, was the city trying to sell this property recently? Is that?
I have heard that, but I was not informed of any further talks about that, so.
When you say across the street, which street?
Sorry, it's Beckstead Lane.
Okay.
So right here in Beckstead Lane, I think, and the applicant can speak to this, but I believe their business is just north of where my location map is, title, just to the west of that, northwest.
Is there any fencing on the property to ensure customers are not parking there, or is it just open?
So as of right now, it's just open. I'm not sure if they're going to be installing fencing, though. Do you know?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
And just to confirm, access will only be from going northbound on Beckstead. They won't be able to cross Beckstead coming southbound, and no access off of 114th.
Right now, it's a full access off Beckstead Lane.
Okay.
Yeah, but both off directions. 114th,
though. They have to turn on the Beckstead to get into the parking lot.
Right. Correct. Yeah.
And I'm assuming it's okay because Beckstead's right there, but there won't be any issues with traffic stacking with Redwood and Beckstead and the traffic flow on 114th westbound.
We've not noticed any issues. Beckstead Lane is relatively low traffic volumes, and with 28 parking stalls and just employees, we didn't, from an engineering perspective, we didn't see issues with this.
And then, of course, Miguel just listed the hours of enforcement. Who would enforce those? Is it the construction company? Would it be city resources, i.e. public safety? If somebody's parked there after the posted hours.
In terms of enforcement, I'm not sure. Perhaps the applicant can speak to that, but I just want to make a correction. I previously said 9 a.m., so the planned hours are 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. For employee parking.
And I know we're not a legislative body, but if it is city resources, the police department enforcement, I'm hoping some sort of bond or contract has to be established for that patrol. Just that the city doesn't incur the cost of this additional service.
Commissioner Gidge, maybe I could chime in on this. As Miguel mentioned, the lease agreement has not been finalized, but Mr. Simonson would know this better than me, but I would expect, since we're the property owners, that if the person we're leasing to is not following what they've committed to, then we would probably use that for enforcement more than police, in my mind.
Perfect.
Are we seeing this out of order? I feel like potentially a lease agreement should already be in place, or is this an opportunity for us to state what we feel like should be in the lease agreement?
I'm not sure if I should chime in, but my opinion is we need to know if the conditional use can get approved. Otherwise, there's no use getting into a lease agreement. But,
I agree with that. I think the correct order is to find out if the use is allowed.
Okay.
Got a question. Mm-hmm. What would the impact of this be on the tree line that's on the north of that boundary currently? It looks like it'd be outside of, it would not be impacted. Okay. I think I've answered my own question.
Yeah, the grade's pretty mild there. There's not a lot of slope. It's relatively flat from what I've seen.
Okay. You said it would be insured. What does that cover? Would that cover if there were, say, damage to the utilities, the accesses to adjacent properties?
I'm not sure. I think that might be something that could be in the lease agreement that the city's working on.
That would be a general liability policy.
Okay.
And would cover things like slip and fall just general liability issues for use of a parking lot.
Do you feel like general liability would include if inadvertent damage was made to the utilities?
Well, you're asking me to opine on an agreement I don't have in front of me,
sure.
but I just don't know.
Okay. All right, commissioners, any other questions for staff? Is the applicant present this evening?
I'm here to represent the applicant. He's also on Zoom.
So Miguel indicated that the applicant had made his brother a proxy. So can you come to the podium and tell us your name and where you reside and what your relationship is to the applicant?
Sure, thank you. My name is Troy Ferran. My business is at 11316 South Beckstead Road. And I'm Travis's brother.
Okay. Miguel, you agree that this is the proxy that you were informed of?
You said your name was?
Troy.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Okay, thank you. The chair recognizes that you have permission to speak for the applicant.
Thank you.
Could you give us a little bit of background on what's going on with this request and what the anticipated use is?
Just simply, as it's already been stated, just from an employee, auxiliary parking. And I thought he had from 5:30, but whether it's 5:30 or 6 may not matter, but from that time frame till 9 o'clock p.m., and then there would not be any overnight parking that would be allowed there. So it's just for during the day for overflow of employees. And again, it wouldn't be any customers of his other business, massage locks or whatnot. So just to give a little bit of background, the building that I'm in, Travis and I own together. One side is Ferran Construction, and the other side is Newport Audio Video Electrical.
Okay, I see it. Why the need for this surge parking at this time and for only a temporary time period?
I think it's just a matter of he has employees that some of them take a vehicle home and some don't, some that need to transfer to a company vehicle. So it just gives them a little bit more option to be able to have some parking to be able to accommodate that.
Why won't this need exist in 24 to 36 months?
I think just as he continues to acquire the vehicles so that more people can have a company vehicle than not. So that's part of it.
But what will change in 36 months that will make it so you don't need this overflow parking anymore?
Well, is the amount of vehicles that the company can own that they can actually have a vehicle, to be able to have a vehicle take it home.
Got it.
Opposed to being able to have to drive the rest of the
okay.
business.
So he's making it possible
yeah, I mean, over vehicles
the next
are just,
36 months to eliminate.
Yeah, I mean, just to give you a quick example, when I moved into our building 3+ years ago, I bought a cargo van that we use, and it was one price, and then 2 years later when I bought two more, they were $14,000 more, and then they were another $10,000 more. It's like the vehicles just continue to skyrocket in price. It's unbelievable what it costs to put a vehicle on the road to service our customers.
Commissioners, questions for Mr. Ferran? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Just a note just for public comment that we have received comments from Nancy Laurie and Diane Ziska, and those will be included in public record. They had concerns about hours and access, which I think we've answered, and then damage to utilities potentially being a concern, as well as a request for a pre-construction property survey. Jeremy, can you comment on the need for a pre-construction survey on an adjacent property? Is that a standard?
No, we haven't done that in the past.
Okay. What recourse would a citizen have if they felt like property damage does occur from the development of an adjacent property?
They can contact the city at any time, and the city will come out and look at it. If the city doesn't agree and the property owner still feels that there's damage that needs to be rectified, they could always submit a claim to the city.
Okay. How would the city handle that claim? Do they go evaluate and then?
Yeah, I'd go through another evaluation process and then and then they would respond whether they, you know, agree or decline. And Mr. Simonson, chime in if I get any of this wrong.
What happens if the city agrees that, yes, there's been property damaged? What role does the city play in making that right? Is that the city's role?
You mean property damage to their own property?
No, to an adjacent property.
Well, the standard practice is the property owner on the adjacent property to make a claim. It goes to risk management in the city. And if risk management believes...
If risk management believes that... the claim is justified, it'll probably be negotiated and paid. But most likely this is going to be handled by insurance. And, you know, a general liability policy is not just restricted to damage that occurs on the property that's insuring, but it's generally going to cover some kind of operations and so forth. And these things become, you know, are a function of litigation. I mean, if the damage is a lot of money, then the litigation may go on for a while. But if it's not much money, these things are usually quickly settled and resolved.
Okay. Thank you. One more question before a public comment. Miguel, will this be paved and will there be any lighting added?
So my understanding is will be paved. As far as lighting, I'm not sure. Do you know?
I believe, and maybe the applicant could confirm this, but I think they're going to use asphalt millings or like a road-based surface, so it won't be an asphalt surface. And no, it's not. There's not going to be any lighting because of the temporary nature of it.
Okay. Any concerns with the hours of operation, especially in the winter, and not having lighting?
The city didn't have concerns. There is street lighting on 114th South. And I think there's street lights on Beckstead Lane as well, although I'm not sure how close to this property.
Okay. All right. At this time, we're going to open up this item to public comment. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this item, we'll invite you to come forward. Please state your name and where you reside for our records. You'll have 3 minutes to address the commission. And present your evidence, and then we just ask that the evidence be anything new that we haven't already been presented.
Okay, Nancy Lowry, Diana Ziska. We live at 1600 West, 114 South. First of all, we have a real property exchange agreement with South Jordan. We share that access. We own part of it. We have a temporary easement. Ziska Lowry hereby grants and conveys to the city for this. Well, Ziska Lowry hereby grants and conveys to the city. Anyway, we have a signed shared access agreement with South Jordan. We do not believe the shared access includes Travis Farron's building a parking lot. I don't believe it gives the city the right to allow him to do that because we all are part owners. It's a safety issue as we come out of our driveway. We come around a corner. There could be a head-on.
Are you able to turn the camera on so that they can display their photos? There is a camera above you, I believe. If you'll display it, then we can see them. Are you willing to leave these with the city? Great, thank you.
Okay. We own half the driveway.
Okay.
The easement. From 114th, turning on to Beckstead Lane, going north. There's arrows before our driveway to turn.
All right, now you can put it down on the table and they'll zoom in.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, there's arrows.
Mm-hmm.
Even before our driveway. So it's kind of a, safety issue trying to turn into the driveway. We get that much more traffic turning in with the arrows because there is no left-hand turn Beckstead into our driveway.
Mm-hmm.
Coming down, they're going up south on Beckstead. There's only a right turn out.
Okay.
The road between the car wash, Rocket Express, and Massage Lux, which I call the no-name road because it doesn't have a name. There is no stop sign at that road onto Beckstead Lane, so another safety issue. Along with the vehicles, we have to come around our corner here. It's a blind corner.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's there, again, a safety issue. Along with the traffic that you have to watch for, people walk their dogs on the sidewalk.
Commissioners, I would like to move to let the two ladies addressing us have an additional 3 minutes since there are two of them.
I think we're fine because they're speaking as a group, so I think our rules allow five minutes. So
will you give them an additional three, please? Okay, please.
Okay, and from from 114th here to our driveway, it's only 86 feet 3 inches. From the No Name Road to 114th, it's 70 feet. So we've got a lot of traffic in a short amount of space. So adding traffic coming on that parking lot with pedestrians, trying to watch behind you so you don't get hit trying to turn into that area. Watching what's ahead of you because people are trying to get into the turn lane to go to the car wash. A lot going on there for safety. And again, we do have this agreement with South Jordan, which is, I think, the big point.
Are you willing to leave a copy for the records?
This is an original.
So. Yeah, this is our original. South Jordan should have a copy, but if somebody wants to make a copy tonight,
what do you recommend?
If she wants to stay, or if you want to hand it to him and you're done, I'll go make a copy, but I can bring you back the original too.
Is that agreeable with you?
Yes.
Thank you.
So, the safety, our utilities, and I believe the reason that it's only for our house is for sale. We do have a for sale sign out there. Travis Farron had approached the city previously asking to purchase South Jordan's property. He was told no because there is no revenue in a parking lot. So I'm not sure why the city now is considering giving him a conditional use permit. While our property is for sale, the city has agreed that they would sell their property in addition if a buyer wanted it. So I believe that's the 24 to 36. Plus, is there a provision in that lease agreement that when our property sells, the city can get themselves out of the lease agreement to sell their property along with our property? We're just over an acre. So.
Thank you very much. Will you leave the photos with, is it Ms. Bound or Ms. Valdez that would take them? Okay, we'll have you leave the photos with Ms. Baum and give her the copy of the agreement to make a copy and she'll get it back to you.
Okay, thank you very much. That picture of the no-name road without the stop sign.
That's okay.
But,
thank you. I had it open up on Google Maps. I know exactly what you're talking about.
The reason for the parking is because there are three businesses run out of two buildings and they didn't plan for parking for the employees. They've been parking over the church parking lot. They originally were parking up and down Beckstead Lane.
Okay. Thank
so they didn't plan for parking till.
Is there anybody else that, no, nobody else joined us this evening to speak to this item. Thank you. We'll have you give your documents.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, commissioners, with nobody else present this evening, I'm going to close public comment. We're going to get some questions answered.
Jeremy, the first one's probably for you. Will this parking lot be restricted to a right in, right out? The picture that we were shown with the left-hand turn lanes and the way they're marked, I don't think you can do anything besides that. And then how will you enforce that? They shouldn't be turning left out of there with the markings.
So as engineering looked at this, I mean, if the road were restriped, we would probably stripe it differently to accommodate the parking lot a little bit better. But with the low volume on Beckstead Lane and the relatively low traffic volume coming from this parking lot, for a temporary basis, we were comfortable with them having full access. If it did become a safety issue, we could restrict the access at any time to be a right-in, right-out.
I normally would go on to the next item. I'm going to state it right now. This reminds me a little of 40th West. I'm sure the volume is not 40th West, but we've talked about it. I hate that left-hand lane or left-hand turns are not striped allowed, but are happening all over the place. That thing's a disaster. And I know the volume's different. I'm just going to state that right now since we're on that item. I'm getting a lot of nods. There's no stop sign across the way. I'm seeing that these two things do not line up. I think I would recommend that as part of safety that a conditional use permit would look at potentially requiring stop signs be put in both places, just to state that Beckstead has the right of way and that you need to make sure things are clear. And I know that's probably actually what it would be, but I think that that visual reminder to stop and pay attention is probably necessary, especially with that cross barely offset from one another. Although if it's a right in, right out, they shouldn't conflict.
The stop, are you referring to the stop at the car wash, the access from the car wash?
I would say there and this parking lot, I would put a stop sign.
The access at the car wash is private. I mean, when with driveways, commercial entrances, exits, okay. There's sometimes they put stop signs up, sometimes the property owners choose not to put stop signs up. But it's kind of implied that, you know, the main street has the right of way. I mean, if we wanted to require a stop sign, you know, for this parking lot, I can't really speak to that. I don't see any issues with that.
All right. I'm going to the next. The applicant didn't explicitly state this. I'm concerned for them. I didn't realize their access came from around behind like that. I think I would require signage near there, just making sure that people using this parking lot are aware that they cannot block this resident's ability to get around that corner. I'm sure it will be striped such that it's not, but I think a sign reminder would be merited, because I do see that as potentially being an impact that we need to mitigate.
And especially if they're not there to move their vehicle because they're out.
On a job. So, just something I saw from the pictures that they showed. Can you comment on this agreement? I'm guessing that this grants them access on city property, a passage to Beckstead Lane. Do I understand that correctly, that that's what's going on for this adjacent resident?
The agreement that they have, the property owners, I can't speak to that. I have not seen that agreement.
Okay. Could we get the aerial view back up just to see what land the city owns?
Is it that little sliver outside the red, just north of the red?
I'm guessing that's their property, but perhaps it requires a little bit of city property as well.
From the picture she showed, it looks like the greenery was just on that space where they turn around. I'm just trying to...
It's like curb cut spans both properties.
Right. I agree. So it's going to be a joint access agreement.
So I would agree.
Can I make a comment on this agreement? We don't have it in front of us. I've not seen it. I heard during the verbal presentation terms used such as we own part of it. We have an easement. All of those are different forms of ownership of property. And I'm going back to the fall of 1978 when I was taking contracts from Dean Walter Ober, the meanest cuss anywhere around, who was teaching us law students. He says, you're going to be asked over the course of your career to give opinions about, you're going to be asked a million times to be given an opinion about a contract you haven't seen. And you don't do it. Okay, so we've had a contract, you know, how this affects the conditional use permit, I'm not sure, but it's a contractual arrangement of some type. I think that these residents that have come up and spoken aren't just making this up. They've got an agreement of some type, and I don't know what it says, and neither does apparently anybody else really know what it says. And so at some point, now if the city was not involved as an owner, I think I would say to them, you better go deal with the owner of the property on your private contractual arrangement. And I think that's what they need to do now, is they need to come to the city, who is the, just happens to be the property owner here, and say, we've got this agreement, and if they think that the agreement prohibits in some way or violates, or the city's arrangement to lease the property violates an agreement that apparently nobody has been considering in the city, then we need to go over that. I don't think that it really bars issuing a conditional use permit, but it does raise a big concern that we need to address with these residents about exactly what their agreement says and whether it bars entering into a lease agreement with the applicant.
Miguel, I assume you were not aware that there might potentially be...
Yeah, I was not aware there was another...
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, based on that, I think it would behoove us to table this item because there are too many lingering questions. The city now has a copy of what was presented tonight, but we have, this commission hasn't seen it, can't, I think, make an appropriate decision on a conditional use permit. While that question of if this even is allowed... Mm-hmm. Until that's reviewed by all the parties involved.
I agree. Before we table anything, though, I would recommend that potentially we finish addressing all the questions that came up. I'm going to discuss that possibility.
I agree.
I wonder, can you condition the approval? A lot of times we say based on it meeting city ordinance and code, can we say that...
And agreements.
That the conditional use is contingent upon an agreement
successfully executed? Yeah, if what the residents stated was true, that they couldn't... The property can't be entered in another type of agreement, this application's moot. And so, do we make a recommendation that can never be, agreed to? But I agree with Commissioner Hollis that, address the other concerns. So when we do hear this again, we can just get to the matter of making the actual motion at that point.
Let's come back to that then. We were presented some distances. They're very close to 114th, I agree. All the same concerns as 40th, just with so many entrances in a short period of time. I am curious about the claim that Mr. Farron offered to buy this property and the city declined because they didn't want a permanent parking lot, I'm assuming is the case. But if that is the case, then I question the claim that this parking lot need is temporary. They seem to be in conflict with one another. Miguel, do you know anything about the history? I know you're one of our newest planning people.
I can't speak to that, whether or not the city was planning on selling this or not. I don't know.
I don't think any of us can, because we're not part of the We're not the employees of the city that deal in property, okay, property exchange or sales. So we have no idea that it was ever proposed.
All right. I think that does, however, go down the list of evidence that was presented to us in the public comment. So we're going to circle back around. Well, are there other?
One other question.
Please.
So we're saying this is a temporary issue, but is the city concerned at all that there's not enough parking in those parking lots on Beckstead, or do we have businesses in there that should not be allowed in there, or do we, like, what's the actual parking issue that we have a need for an additional parking lot? It seems highly unusual.
I think we're looking at you on that one, Miguel.
Or would that be an item for business licensing and as us as a committee? I mean, do we, how does that get, can we make a recommendation to staff to let business licensing know to inspect the three businesses in those two buildings?
Well, there's lots of businesses like in that area, so I'm not directing this directly at the applicant, but like obviously there's a problem, and we probably ought to figure out what the source of the problem is so that we don't continue to see issues like this.
Right.
We'll come back to that in a minute.
Okay, just so you're aware.
Thank you.
I think, you know, I've been out there, I've gone into the, you know, go to the car wash, I've seen other businesses. I think the only one that's probably most likely, as Troy had mentioned, that the reason I have an issue with the parking is because they have a lot of, they have several vehicles that their employees use during the day, but they don't take them home at night. So they have to drive there, park their vehicles. Plus there's also the vehicles that are stored there overnight on their site. And so once they are able to send each employee home with a vehicle, then there will be, there'll be less. The only thing they'll have is, it'll be just like every employee has their own vehicle to use, and there won't be any excess need for this parking lot, because they'll be able to fit them all on the parking lot that they own, the property they own. So I think that's what they're intending to do in the future. But I don't think that the other businesses in that shopping center would want them to be parking their trucks and vehicles or whatever they're using, their panel vans, on their property and taking up their spaces. I think it's just an issue with this one particular business. So I don't know for sure though, but it seems to be, because I haven't seen too many, you know, there seems to be a lot of empty spaces when I've been over there in the rest of the parking lot, but not in this parking lot. So.
Commissioners, we were presented with some information by staff that the applicant might potentially be online. If anybody would like to make a motion regarding that, we can, or we can move forward based on the conversation we had at the very beginning of the meeting.
Yeah, my only concern, if there are others,
agreed.
Would we have to open up to anybody else who's attending? So I would be not in favor where there's a representative of the applicant in presence.
I would say that he is the applicant. There's no more open public hearing, so you don't have to let anybody else talk, because it's not a public hearing any longer. So either way.
True. However, Mr. Schaefermeyer did advise that when we enact any rule, we need to be careful to apply it
to all
consistently. Mm-hmm. So I worry about establishing a precedent where we need to always allow applicants to participate remotely.
Well, and there is an in-person representative of the applicant. True. So,
is there anything else, Mr. Farron, that you would like to present on this topic that can enlighten the conversation? We would have to ask you to come to the podium to do so.
I'm not sure what other point my brother would like to make.
Okay.
other than probably just restating that, I mean, I guess, yes, there's one point I'd like to clarify from this gentleman here. On the, if you pull the map back up, I could just quickly illustrate it. On the building that's the newest building right across the street, which he's obtained, he's done all of his inspections, and I know that all the businesses in there are licensed appropriately. That parking lot is not overused. As stated, there's parking lots available in there, so the three different spaces there are currently, the parking lot is currently accommodating those three spaces that he has in that building. One of them is Massage Luxe. The other building is a salon that he's put together. And the other end of the building is an overflow from his electrical company that doesn't require any parking at all because it's just a bit of storage. So it does come from, as we stated, the electrical side of things. So hopefully that helps.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. Staff, I think we're leaning towards tabling this so that the agreement that was presented this evening can be reviewed and we can be presented with the findings to ensure that there would be no conflict in granting this access to a second party. Would you advise differently? Do you have any additional information you feel like we should be made aware of before we take an action like that?
I think you should do it.
Okay.
And then just, Madam Chair, just so one thing, and this might be, I'll put it in our Google sheet for training, but just the process on an application like this when it comes in, what information's pulled from what sources. I know I've had a personal issue with this the last month or two as well, but where would something like this be validated or found before, you know, ownership or easements or accesses, whatever that might be, what sources are those pulled from? And then just the application process, is there a checklist that these have been checked before they get to us so we can not have to get to this type of tabling motion, and then delay the applicant, because it's going to be at least until our next meeting. So as you, just for information for us, and some of us have been doing this for a while, but this is still new to me, is like what are the processes, the steps, and just so we're familiar with that as well when we get to this step. Okay. But Madam Chair, with that, I'd like to move that based on our discussion this evening, and having already had the public hearing, we table this item until, I'm going to say till the next meeting, our second meeting in May.
Is that a reasonable time frame to review that document and have it included in a staff report? Miguel, it's probably going to be you.
Can we just leave it open until the document has been reviewed?
To a date uncertain? Okay. I move the table to a date uncertain until the document presented this evening has been reviewed.
Okay. We have a motion.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, citizens, and Mr. Farron, for your participation this evening. We will see this item
maybe
2 weeks. It will be noticed again. I don't know that it will be noticed again. It will not be, since we've had our public hearing, but we will be presented with that additional information so that we can make a decision.
So I guess on that, would this be a business item and not a public hearing item? Sorry.
I need some help.
I just want to ask that.
It would not be a public hearing item. It would be listed as an action item at the front. However, I want to advise the two women that spoke that they should check the on Friday, every Friday before the next meeting, next couple of meetings, to make sure, since they're not going to get noticed of it again, to make sure, see if it's on the agenda. So,
okay, the Planning Commission meets the second and fourth Tuesdays, so the Friday before those is when our packet would go up on the city website. And you would see that information. Okay, thank you. With that, we will move to item H2, the South Jordan City Park Preliminary Subdivision. And Miguel, you have our staff report again.
I don't think you guys voted. I didn't get a roll call. We didn't do a roll call. Should we have done a roll call?
Not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm so sorry. Let's do a roll call vote.
Okay.
Thank you.
Commissioner Gedge.
Aye.
Commissioner Revens.
Yes.
Go ahead. Because it's a tabling motion?
Yep. Go ahead, Terry.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Commissioner Bishop?
Yes.
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye again.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got all. Okay.
I get two that time.
Commissioner Hollis? Yes. Okay. So 5-0, we voted to table this motion until staff can review the evidence that we were presented with this evening. And I wish I'd been able to say it before Ms. Lowry and Ms. Ziska had left, but I do appreciate their participation. They brought evidence that was very helpful in our proceedings. I really appreciate citizens that come and participate in the process like that. All right, Miguel, item H, three.
Two.
Thank you.
So this is a preliminary subdivision of a city-owned piece of land located at 10749 South, 2200 West. So the proposal here is to subdivide it. Well, first of all, the zoning here is, this lot is A5 surrounded by R1.8 single family on the west and open space park on the east.
You said the city owns this?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. My question is,
I missed that. Okay.
It's a single family home.
Right.
So that's the land use map. It's open space designation. And so this is the proposal. So north is to your right. So that lot one, that's going to be a proposed, the proposed size is 0.55. So that meets the zoning requirement for the R1.8 zone for the future rezone that you'll see too. And then lot two is a little bit bigger. It's 0.82 acres. And that one is, well, actually both have a canal easement currently going through them. And so just based on this subdivision, and you did, and yeah, you, there is a home here, but I'm not sure if it's being occupied currently, but apart from that, based on the findings of the subdivision requirements, we recommend approval for a motion to approve.
Thank you, Miguel. Why? I'm going to leave that really general so you can tell me what you choose.
Why are we doing it? I can help you out there. It's because the city has purchased the property, all of it, and perhaps in the future there will be a new fire station built out there. We don't know for sure yet, but that lot one, the where the house is being divided out to, for lot one. It'll stay a home. The city will sell that, will sell that property to whoever buys it. And then the rest of the property will become, with the rezone, if approved, will be zoned to the open space park zone, which would either be used as, could be used for park area or for actually maybe some temporary parking, extra parking for the park. But there has been, we have had discussion about moving the fire, fire station on Redwood Road, because it's become very difficult to access Redwood Road from the fire station when there's an emergency because of the traffic and seven lanes of traffic to cross when something like that happens. So in the future, there may be a fire station built on 2200 West or near there. Right in this near this area, I think Jeremy has can add a lot more to whether that's going to happen. It's not going to happen soon. If it does, it's still years out, is from what I understand. So,
would it potentially be on this piece of land?
Yes,
part of it. Yeah, it's a pretty big campus that they would be building because it'd be both an admin building and a firehouse, you know, with a crew. And so, yeah, this, it would be mostly just the parking lot would be, on that lot too. And then the firehouse would be on the east side of the canal, immediately adjacent though.
Where would they play football?
That's something we've been looking at really closely. There's enough space to tuck it in, yeah, without impacting existing fields.
Any other questions?
Yeah, just on the canal easement that was listed, just to confirm, no building can go on an easement. I mean, and I'm sure, you know, I wish the other residents from the previous item were still here on easement versus property ownership. Easement gives you access to the property. You just can't build on it. That's correct. That you can't.
There won't be any building. That's why we showed that you can see on the lot one, it shows those dotted lines, mm-hmm. and that's the building envelope. It can't go onto, no building can be put on that, in that canal easement. So.
Yeah, I'm stressing that for a few residents I've talked to, that easements don't relate to property ownership, that the property owner is still the city of South Jordan for this lots one and two. It's just they can't be built in an easement. So the area shown in the easement. Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Evans, anything? Okay. I think then at this time we're going to open up this item to public comment, just to formally do so. We do not have anyone else in our auditorium, so unless there's a staff member who'd like to speak as a citizen. All right, I'm going to close public comment. Bring it back to the commission. Commissioners, I don't see a problem with this. I'm glad that they're keeping the house with their housing shortage. We won't have one fewer homes yeah. in the neighborhood.
My only comment would be just the rezone to be on a separate meeting ahead of doing the subdivision. That's just the only, I know the city's the applicant, but just precedence for other applicants in the future if they're
sure.
hearing this
going
evening.
Along. And for way in the future, just I'll be interested to see how the fire department accesses the roads in the area. I could see people right along 22nd maybe not loving this new location, but.
Well, they will if they have a fire.
Yeah, that's true. Anything yep. else? All right.
Maybe not directly to this application, but it is nice when you can run a subdivision along with a rezone subject to the approval of the rezone. It just makes the process much more simple for both the applicant and the city, I think. Makes it a little more streamlined and a little less time-consuming for everyone involved. So I get that they're kind of out of order, but it makes a lot of sense on the flip side of it.
Yeah, I mean, really, like a subdivision can happen at any time, so
this one is subject to the rezone.
Because there's
cost
involved, that's usually why the order matters.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good point, because you can have a preliminary plat, which you as a body approve the preliminary. If it's subject to a future rezone that doesn't happen, then staff would not be allowed to approve the final plat, and it would never get recorded. So.
And applicants are made aware that they are paying for this without the other approval, and there will be no refunds. So I think as long as everyone involved is aware that there are risks to running a subdivision prior to the rezone approval, I don't have any issue seeing them at the same time.
All right. Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Thank you.
Make sure I'm on the right one. Based on our discussion tonight, I move that the Planning Commission approve file number PLPP 2024-00044.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion? All right, I'll second that. Ms. Valdez.
Commissioner Bevins?
Yes.
Commissioner Hollist?
Yes.
Commissioner Bishop?
Is that me? Uh-huh. Yes.
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Catmull?
Aye.
Okay, this item passes 5-0. So we'll now go to its sister item this evening under our legislative public hearings, item I-1, the South Jordan City Park Land Use Amendment Rezone. And for those listening along on legislative items, this body becomes a recommendation body. We will make a recommendation to City Council, who will ultimately make the final decision on this item.
So it's the same property as the item before. So for this is a land use amendment and rezone, but first of all, the land use amendment is only gonna be for the lot one, because currently the land use here is open space, but for it to be in R1.8, it has to be stable neighborhood, which is the land use in yellow surrounding that. So that's the land use designation we are trying to have for lot one. Lot two can remain the same because it's open space. For the rezone, lot one, is the proposal here is to rezone it to R1.8 single family residential and lot two to open space park. And with that, staff recommends that the Planning Commission recommend approval to the City Council for the resolution and the rezone.
What type of zoning does lot two have to secure to then build a fire station in the future or a parking lot?
It is allowed, the fire station would be allowed in the open space park zone.
Okay, I'm predicting X number of years from now, a different commission is going to be hearing from the homeowner that purchases lot one, that they don't want that next to their stable residential neighborhood.
That's a possibility, okay. Yes, but the zoning will already be in place. Okay, and
that's why I'm asking.
So, yeah. So.
All right. That was it for me. Anybody else?
Yeah, just the rezone from A5 to R1.8, lot one will be forfeiting animal rights, even though it's more than a half acre and could have a large animal point. So just make sure that's, I guess, on the record and confirmed, assumption.
They don't forfeit their animal rights. R1.8, they're allowed animal rights in R1.8 zone as long as they have over a half an acre.
Good thing I brought that up. Okay, they can have a horse.
Of course. All right. Any other questions for staff? All right. I'm going to open up this item to public comment. Same invitation as before. 3 minutes. State your name. If you're staff, we're going to make you come to the podium. All right. Then I will close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Commissioners, any further discussion on this item? I don't see any issues with it. I like that it's adjacent to a big campus that the city already owns. And the possibilities that opens up for the future. Okay, I'm ready for a motion.
Madam Chair.
Please.
I move that the Planning Commission recommend that the City Council approve the following. Resolution R2024-32, approving the land use amendment and changing the designation from open space to stable neighborhood for lot one of the proposed South Jordan City Park subdivision plat.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion?
Do we need to also include the ordinance?
Or do we make two separate motions?
Sorry, I was trying to, to start on the second.
No, it's a good question.
One there, yeah.
We can vote on what you've done and then have a second motion.
Sure.
All right. So I think I seconded it. Or no, I will second your initial motion. Ms. Valdez, will you lead us in a roll call vote?
Commissioner Bishop?
Yes.
Commissioner Hollist?
Yes.
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Catmull?
Aye.
Commissioner Bevins?
Yes.
Okay, that motion passes 5-0. Do I have another motion?
I'll just pick you right up again. Madam Chair, I move that the Planning Commission recommend that the City Council approve Ordinance Number 2024-07-Z, approving the zone change from agriculture A5 to single family residential R1.8. An open space park for lot one and lot two for the South Jordan City Park subdivision.
Okay, we have a motion. I will second that. Ms. Valdez.
Okay, Commissioner Bishop?
Yes.
Commissioner Hollist?
Yes.
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Catmull?
Aye.
And Commissioner Bevins?
Yes.
Okay, so both of those motions as a pair will move to City Council with a 5-0 vote and approval. Okay, I think that takes care of our legislative items this evening. Any other business for us, staff? Okay, commissioners, take a look at that Google document. This thing struck your fancy. Let's get them on there. No idea is a bad idea. We'll go through it privately and then decide how we want to proceed once we've had an opportunity to think about it. And I would recommend a couple more meetings just because I think having meetings is when I think of things that I want to bring up, like what our city's parking ordinances are. So, okay, if that's it, then I'm going to move that we adjourn.
Wait, I have a question.
Sure.
Our next meeting is scheduled. Hold on.
Well, I guess we didn't ask about.
28. It's right before.
Day after Memorial.
Right after Memorial Day weekend. So I will be here, but we may want to check and see if anyone else is gone.
I will be here.
I will be traveling that day, so I probably will be here.
Okay.
Mr. Bishop. I think with three, we're good. So okay. Please.
I'm not sure.
Those three that have committed, if anything changes ASAP, let's be in touch. Okay.
Speaking just real quick, though, you didn't ask the question. I'll ask it. Uh-huh. Well, we have a meeting in 2 weeks. Don't you need to worry about a coming?
Yes, we'll have a meeting in 2 weeks if you're all here, or okay. If there's three of you here. I can't remember what the item's on, but there's at least two, I believe, so far.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And I apologize for all the coughing.
Well, all right. Maybe
there is a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great.